Then we need that round of applause that kicks in.
I think it comes with it. Hold on, let me see. So people, that's your sign. That's the symbol, the sign, the prompt for you to either stay and listen to Chris and I, or to get up and leave. Because once the lights go down, the doors are closed and you're stuck in your seat.
It's true. Strap in, put that rocket on your back, and away you go.
This is season 4, episode 24 of the podcast. But more importantly, this is episode...
As importantly.
Oh, sorry. As importantly, this is episode 158. Chris, we've reached...
Really?
158. This is our 158th episode.
That is awesome.
I know it's not the milestone of 206, but it's working. We're getting there.
Yeah, that's awesome. 158? You actually counted? Or are you just tracking the numbers?
I looked on our blog. This is today is 158.
It's 158th day.
It's 158th day. Happy 158.
Let's celebrate with a little round of applause and the TED Talk sound.
Sure.
Okay.
I will just prop that up for us here.
Welcome to my TED Talk, day 158.
Here it comes.
Stephen Hurley's rolling over in his in his sound studio right now with us doing, you know, bumpers and sound effects in that way. It's like having a, you know, live studio audience or somebody just underneath the table with, like, you know, pots and pans and crinkly paper trying to make sound effects for us.
What's
the Dolby? You ever seen the Dolby sound effects people?
No.
So the people that create all the sort of extra sound effects for movies and the types of material that they have. And you wouldn't think that that recipe would result in that sound, but our ears want to hear it a certain way when we're being presented a picture. Right. So, you know,
I saw a TikTok yesterday of a sound person.
I think I saw that too for the,
Ratatouille, I think.
Yeah. And all the sounds that they're using to create food sounds.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's what was in my mind. So that's maybe for at least one episode. I'll have my kids here and they'll just be off in the wings or just underneath the table here doing sound effects. Funny to that end, fun fact that you don't know about me, something we know about me. When I was in high school, I was on the improv team.
Really?
So, yeah. So my whole thing in high school, I loved drama. I loved fine art. I loved writing. All of that stuff still kind of sticks with me. Props to Bill Fitches, my art teacher. Bill, hope you're still rocking the world out there. Amazing guy. I think I might have told you about him from the point of view. He's a teacher. I talked about it somewhere. He's a teacher that I didn't get at the time. But he put in my mind the idea that a teacher can be more than a teacher. And I don't mean like how you connect with someone, but he actually had other things that he did. Much like how, you know, you're doing your videos. I kind of do my writing and painting. We have this podcast. We exist in multiple digital spheres. All before that, he used to make dresses. He was a tailor or a seamster, I don't know what it's called, a clothing designer. So he constantly, so our art room looked like a great big lab. It was massive. And his office, he had, I don't know what they're called, but those kind of like, it looks like a mannequin, but it's just the body. And it's kind of soft and you can adjust the shape of it. So you can actually build clothing on it. So you basically resize this kind of body shape mannequin. And as you actually are hanging material on it, you know, you can sort of build custom dresses and stuff. So I think, and I'm digging back now, I can remember him making like wedding dresses and grad dresses and all this kind of stuff. So watching him do that at the time, I really didn't connect the dots. It was very kind of natural to watch Fitches do that. But I loved the fact that now as a memory, I love what that sort of stuck in me. So this was long, like, I'm not thinking of being a teacher when I'm in high school. I'm just looking at someone that's rocking their sort of alternative space in school, right? And it almost, I think in some ways, it built into me that idea that school is more than just the activities in front of you, right? And the humans around you do more than just teach, like that people are whole people. And other, like, I wouldn't have had the words to say that at the time, but I was fascinated by that because he would go in, he would set us the task. We'd all be doing kind of our art, whether it was watercolor, painting, drawing, whatever we're doing, sculpting. And then while we're doing our thing, he would go in and he'd continue building the dress or the piece. So I like that. Why do I say that? How did I get to that? Track me back. Why did I want to talk about a teacher, art class, Fitch's, TED Talk applause? How did I get there, dude?
To be honest with you.
Oh, fossil. That's fossil fuel.
A fossil fuel there for you. Some carbon, some soot.
The sound effects. Me being an improv student. Okay, so there we go. Good job. You got me there. So besides the art, I love drama, but I wasn't a big fan of learning scripts. I read a lot. I wrote a lot, but I didn't like having to memorize scripts. So I was on the improv team. And this is a thing that high schools have, competitive improv team. And there used to be something called the Canadian Improv Olympics. And we would compete with other high schools. We'd go to Toronto and compete with other high schools. And you basically have different category events that you would compete in. One of the elements of doing improv is that you don't get to bring props. It's only the performers. That's it. You have to create everything on stage. So often when we were doing scenes, now I'm backtracking to the sound effects, my teammates would be just off stage doing the sound effects. So if I was talking, you know, if the scene that I was in, I'd be talking about, it's so rainy out here. The beach is just so dangerous. There'd be someone like, whoosh, whoosh, and then making sounds in the side. So we're doing that on the fly Dolby kind of, I think it's called Dolby. No, it's not. It's F, it's not Dolby. It's Foley. Foley artists are the one that do the sound effects, I think. Just like we saw in the Disney clip, Ratatouille. There we go.
So your talk about the sound effects. Yeah. I don't know how it did this, but it's connected me to some of the fun. I can't believe I'm saying this. The fun I'm having at work with my students. Now, this is micro fun because I had to hear you talk about what you just talked about for me to realize what I'm doing at work with the kids to feel some joy. Mm-hmm. So I've been having, and my students and I have been having a lot of fun working face to face using some of the virtual situations we got ourselves into. So now,
okay.
And I got to give props to Joe Marquez because I'm making a connection to one of the things I talked to Joe about when I found out we were going back to face-to-face was I really wanted to go Web 3.0 with my blended learning. I'm a big fan of blended learning. I loved doing it before virtual. Then when I went virtual, I was craving working face-to-face with my students and going 3.0 with blended learning. Blending the face-to-face and the digital in this beautiful mess of chaos that can serve so many students and meet so many needs, right? Like creative wise and collaboration wise, and especially during this pandemic. So anyway, between what you just said about your teacher and the sound effects and the Foley artists and my talk with Joe about blended learning, there's been a lot of fun interaction between my students and I. So I'll be sitting at my computer and I will have what's on my screen projected for everybody to see teaching a lesson. And someone will raise their hand and they'll ask a question and I'll look at them and I'll say, I'm sorry, you glitched. Like something else. You glitched. I missed it. Can you say it again? And then they stare at you and I'm like, your camera's on. I can see you looking at me and you don't know what's going on. And they're now everybody bursts out laughing. And I'm like, this is good. that banter back and forth. I know I'm just giving you my side, but the back and forth banter with the kids blending in some of that virtual realities with the face-to-face realities is bringing me some joy. And you just reminded me of that. So thanks for that. Thursday was the first day since being back from remote learning. So 5, 6, 7 days. Yes, Thursday was the first day that I had a computer for every kid in my classroom.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
And I literally wanted to cry tears of joy because I finally could do what I wanted to do. I could do the blended and make sure everybody had a device to participate. And there's a, I'm not even going to get into the reasons why it took so long for the computers to get back into the classroom. There's a few layers there and some of them that I can't say here on the podcast because it's not going to be professional what I say. So I'm not going to say it, but I'm going to put it out there so that you know that there are layers.
Yeah.
There are layers to us and what we do, and there's professional layers and there's unprofessional layers. So finally Thursday, they all had one. And I was literally like, I sat down and I looked at them and they could tell something was up. And they're like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm just happy that I can finally open our Google Classroom again in a way that everybody can be part of it again. And as I sit here with you, we can do digital stuff through there. And now they're looking at me like, uh-oh, that something's going to be unleashed because he just told us he's really excited about this. So then I said to them, I have an idea, and it involves Minecraft. And now you see drool running down their face because they're like, we're going to get to use Minecraft. And I'm like, yes, because I learned a little bit about Minecraft. I learned a little bit more about it when we were away virtual. Mm-hmm. And because Michael Leonard, who's a consultant in my school board, he wants to run a Minecraft esports tournament, which I think is awesome. And I'm involved.
So yep.
I said to the kids, not only are we bumping up our blended learning, we're going to bump up Minecraft. And I'm kind of suffering here. I'm teaching structures in science, and I'm feeling the burn of it. So I'm like, well, we're going to apply some of the things we learn about structures in science to our building in Minecraft. So I'm telling the kids this, and they're literally like, they're foaming at the mouth now.
Yeah.
Can we just dive in? I'm like, no, because I need to build some capacity in some of you.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday we got to use Minecraft, and yesterday they learned a difficult lesson. You know, there's some issues with Minecraft Education Edition. There are some issues. You try to join worlds and it doesn't work. So I could be hosting a world and I put up the join code for everybody, but some people can get in, some people can't. And I learned from Michael and from a couple of other Minecrafters when we met to talk about Minecraft, I learned that this is an issue, not just with me, but it's happening all over the place. So I told the kids, I'm like, you're not going to be able to join, and that's going to frustrate you. And you need to know that you're going to feel that frustration. So lesson number one, which was yesterday, is we're going to try to join different worlds, and you're going to feel that frustration. And this is how I want you to deal with it. And so I was doing everything I could to provide them with as much as I could give them on the front end to let them know this is going to happen. Expect it to happen. And when it does, you need to breathe. You need to talk about how you're feeling, because the last thing you want is to upset someone in the room that causes chaos, that leads me to have to shut everything down. That's not what we want. But, you know, I tell them, my patients have run dry in general. I'm not as patient as I used to be. So I'm telling you where I'm at, and I'm telling you what we need to do so that we can support each other. You can support me, I can support you, and we can learn, and we can have some amazing, amazing fun. And we did it, and it was awesome, and the kids were frustrated, like I said they would be. I was frustrated because, you know, there's God love all these kids, but there's always a handful that say to me, this isn't working. Why isn't it working? And I'm like, I guess you were glitching during the time that I explained why it wouldn't work, or you got up to go get a snack and didn't come back to the computer for 30 minutes type of deal. So there's a little bit of laughs there with that. But I say, it just doesn't work. I don't know the ins and outs. I just know that I could give you a join code for all of you to come to my world, and only 5 out of 20 of you would be able to get in. I don't know. Which it really sucks, because if you build your lessons, if you build your learning that everybody's going to come into my world to do this, you're in big trouble.
Right.
Well, I've already dealt with that issue. I don't need to deal with it anymore. So now it's like, as long as you can get into Minecraft, then you can do some of the things that we're going to be doing. And then I can teach you how to share with me things you've done. And we're going to be doing writing that involves what you've done and reflection on what you've done. And we're going to integrate science. And just, I felt alive again as a teacher, because I can actually do something that I've done in the past without the support to do it. But now I have the tools for all the kids to do it. Thank you, COVID-19, because if it wasn't for that, you know, I wouldn't have what I need. But so I just wanted to throw that out there, that what you said connected to what I was talking to Joe about is leading me to a place where I'm finding some joy again with my work. And there's nothing better. It's pretty cool to say to the kids, like, okay, we did a religion activity, and it was combined. It was religion, media, oral language, and writing. Okay, so it was like, I made sure to cover a lot of things.
That's solid.
And it feels good. Like, as a teacher, it feels good that the, you know, the maybe total of 2.5 hours we spent on this work is like money for me. It helped me see a lot of things. I was able to give a lot of feedback around a lot of different things to my kids. And I'm proud to say I saw improvement in all of them. So forget the grades. Look at the feedback. Look at the growth and the development from the feedback. Man, I was living large at the end of this week. So we're talking about Lent, right? It's the 40 days that lead us to Easter. It's a time in our faith to reflect on how we can give, how we can pray, and how we can fast in a way to make us better for Easter. So it was like, so we're talking religion, we're talking about our faith. And I said to the kids, now all of you are going to make a Lenten plan. You're going to think about and write about what you're going to give and to who you're going to give it to, and what you're going to give up and how you're going to give it up, and how you're going to talk to God during this time. What does that look like for you? You're going to think about that. You're going to brainstorm it, and you're going to write it out on a piece of paper. And then there's going to be an opportunity for you to create something digitally to represent your plan. And then you're going to share that plan with the class. And we're going to hold each other accountable for our plans, our Lenten plans. And they're like, okay. And they were kind of looking at me like, this doesn't sound so great. And then when I told them how it was going to happen, I was going to post this in the classroom. You're going to use your Chromebooks for this. You can use pencil and paper for that. They were like all in. And again, I felt alive. I felt like this is what I come to school with. These are where my interests are. I can take all that and I can roll it into the global competencies, right? I can roll curriculum in, which is my job, but they don't want to hear about the curriculum. They want to know, what are we going to do to help us learn? And is it going to be fun? And they really like the technology. And so I can use that as the way to hit the fun, as well as get to those global competencies and that curriculum. And I can feel good about what I'm doing, because sometimes I feel great about what I'm doing as a teacher, but I look at them and they look miserable. And then really, well, what's the point? I'm feeling good, but they're not. And there's other times where they feel great and I'm miserable. That's not cool either. So I am hoping that we can be at school for a while and we can keep using the fluencies we learned from our virtual learning with the fluencies we've learned from our face-to-face learning. And I can blend those things together and we can create some really amazing things and we can have a lot of learning and growth along the way.
It's cool. My monitor, because I wasn't interacting with it, just shut off.
That's good.
That wasn't the, that. No, there was no applause on that one. It's just the swirly, swirly sound.
You said in the on-ramp that there was something you wanted to hit on the pod. I don't know if it has to do with your teacher candidate.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you want to go there?
Yeah, I can. Sure, I can sort of do that.
Well, go in any direction you want.
Yeah, so right now, have a teacher candidate with me. Corey, he's with me. And it's really cool. This teacher, this particular, I guess you could just call them all practicums, right? This practicum is a slightly different style of practicum. It's considered a leadership practicum. And the candidates get to, well, what Corey's been able to do, he looked at some of this, I guess, the spaces where he wanted to grow, and he decided that he wanted to learn more about special education. And it's interesting because what's fascinating to this, and I haven't shared this with him, and I'm just making the connection, a formal connection to it now. That was, so when I went to OISE, I think it was our, I think we had to do three practicums. So when I went to OISE, it was still the 1 year. It was a 1 year program. So we did one practicum, I think early on, like would be in September, October. We did one really quick. And then we did another one in the early in the new year. And then we had to decide what our final one was going to be. So we again had to decide, I guess, on an area of growth that we want to pursue. And I volunteered, I approached the school that my spouse was working, that Karen was working at. I had relationships there. So I approached the VP, one of the vice principals at the time. And I said, you know, can I come here? And I'd really like to dig into special education. And it was transformative for me. I mean, I'm still there. I'm still doing it, special education. But Karen introduced me to one of the teachers there. And she... her name's Lee Haynes. She's like, yeah, sure. Come on. You can come and hang with me. And while I was there learning about spec ed, so she was a cert. She's still a cert, certain English teacher right now. I also got to kind of check out some other stuff. Interesting side note, Karen was teaching at the school as well. And I got to go into her classroom and help out in her classroom. And at the time she was teaching drama and then also in a program that they had going there for students that were really resistant learners. And she was doing a communications class with them, a little bit of writing, a little bit of public speaking, a little bit about self-advocacy. So kind of blending drama and English proficiencies together. But anyways, that practicum was great because I got to pick out one of the strands that I felt like I just didn't get any support in understanding deeply. I shared the story previously about the one prof that had us all look at the poster at the back and not read it. And everyone could basically read the poster at the back of the room and said, well, for there are students that it's the exact opposite. Like they can't force themselves to read it. So everything that you have in your privilege and your learning, they don't have those tools necessarily. And that started to give me a little bit of a perspective on, the sort of fascinating puzzles and challenges of working in special education. So I think when I found out Corey was interested in learning about spec ed, I felt a sort of like a deep vested interest because I can remember myself coming through faculty and seeing that there was missing pieces in what I had learned And so when I was asked if I could do this thing, I'm like, yeah, sure, sounds good. Now, the second cool layer to this is that because it's not a formal practicum, so there isn't the same accountability structure. It really is on Corey to decide what it is that he wants to expand into, and then he's got to document it. He completes daily logs of what we're doing. And then I think there's an assessment I have to do at the end, but the primary driver in this for his assessment is for me to sign off on the logs. So I'll sign off on that. So what makes that really wonderful is it also gives me a lot of freedom to sort of decide, like we've decided collaboratively, but to kind of decide how I'm going to share my knowledge, like my experience and stuff like that. And one of the things he said on Friday, we were just reflecting on the week. He started with me on Wednesday, so we've done 3 days. He said, coming into this, what I thought was going to happen, he said, I was actually in a little bit of a crisis mode. And I appreciate this crisis mode. He said, after the first day, I was in a little bit of a crisis mode. And I appreciate this because that's exactly what the teacher candidate that worked with me last semester said, that they arrived. Now there was different reasons, and you know, I'll do a shameless plug if anybody wants to check out. I did a podcast with my teacher candidate, right? How was your day? It's on Chasing Squirrels. You can find that probably on iTunes still. But we documented our end of day conversations there. And soon after the first day, teacher's name is Miriam. She said she went home and she had a little bit of an anxious response, like she didn't sleep well that night, and she realized that the experience of coming in and starting kind of like, I'll say, like kind of sitting on a lit firecracker or getting strapped to a rocket was a lot. And so she came back in and she pushed back. She said, look, I'd like to kind of just pause. Let's just pull up for a second. And I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things we talked about the day before. And maybe I can help decide what direction we're going to go in this practicum. Now, context, Miriam was a primary junior teacher. She is, well, that's what she is aiming for, being a primary junior teacher. And it was considered to be an alternative placement because I guess candidates were having a really difficult time getting placements in schools. And, you know, think back to September, there was a whole lot of things that were difficult to do. I can only imagine how, you know, some of the struggles that faculties were having in getting their students into schools to get practical experience. So Corey had a similar response after the first day. He said, I went home, I'm driving home. He goes, what have I done? Like, I thought I was going to be sort of teaching learning strategies. I didn't think it would kind of be this. He said that when we came in on the second day, I was a little bit of aware. Like, he didn't tell me this until yesterday. But I was thinking, I got to make sure on the second day, because there was a whole lot of stuff that happened on the first day, I needed to address kind of like the integrated thinking that goes into being a spec ed teacher, and that teaching a course in learning strategies is really such a small part of that. Yeah, teaching a learning strategies class, which is what he thought would be principally something he'd been involved with. On one hand, quite simply, it's teaching a course. You do course design, you create lessons, you sort of figure out what the assessment structure is going to be. You take attendance. Like, it's very pragmatic. What isn't talked about and sort of revealed is the other part of that portfolio, which is resourcing, which is networking, which is case management, which is documentation in SSNet, supporting whole kids away from the classroom is by far, that's the invisible part. So I've sort of taken my direction to be, let's focus on that. Let's let you just sort of witness the lengths you go to get some very small things done, and how sometimes really small things can kind of lead to some big changes for kids and big supports for kids. And he said by the second day, it started to fall into place. And what he needed to do was to let go of the idea that special education is primarily done in a classroom with curriculum as the driver. And I put to him, we talked about a few things, some catchphrases just to sort of anchor the knowledge. But I put to him quite quickly, from my experience, curriculum isn't always the best way to help a kid. And he sort of right away, he's like, write that down. I think it's a good reminder. Go and write that one down. So throughout this week, I said to him, I said, over the weekend, I'd like you to consider, and I kind of gave him an inquiry question to deal with. Because again, I don't have a formal curriculum for a leadership thing, but I figured I want to give him a taste. I want him to have enough tastes of, you know, September 7th, if he secures a contract, he will be governed by the exact same rule book that I am. He's no longer a student teacher, despite the fact that day before he was wondering, you know, what it would be like. You almost don't get a chance. You go from non-teacher to teacher, and you will have the expectations on you. I know we have a new teacher induction program, but the new teacher induction program doesn't remove you from the rules of your union or the rules of your school board or the rules of OCT or the rules of law. Like, you are suddenly governed by all four entities. And then the rules of the community, you know, your connection, the rapport, you step into that. And I told him, I said, it's going to be heady stuff. So let's start practicing, you know, some of the stuff that, or we'll build into our practice, some of the big questions that when you do arrive there, you might have a little bit of a running start. You might know who to talk to and how to talk to them. And then also the ministerial pieces that are associated with it and where the creative thinking is associated with it. And I keep telling him, I said, it's going to continue to be messy for the whole, he's with me for 60 hours. So about 2 weeks and change. It's going to be messy the whole way through. And I said, and if it isn't messy, then we're not learning right. It has to be messy because that's what it's like when you're sort of in growth mode. It's messy. I said, every once in a while, you land on a great checklist. You ran on a great organizer. You find something that kind of congeals your thinking. I said, but really, most of my successes come out of being messy. There's discipline and diligence, of course, but I quickly shift back into messy mode so that I feel I'm more self-aware there. And I said, you're kind of going to be on my rocket for these next 60 hours. So the question I put to him is, I said, I want you to consider how do you support an analog learner through a digital classroom? And I gave him some sort of think abouts, some ways to sort of organize it, give him an organizer. I said, but really, I want you to run as far as you can with this over the weekend. I said, I'm not enforcing an essay, but we're going to talk about that on Monday when we come back in. I said, because you've had a chance to witness all my resources, how I run through the day, how I move, who I talk to, all the littles that happen, all that little the checkpoints along the way. So let's see some guesses. Give it a try. And it's really cool. And again, what happened my first teacher candidate last semester gave me the opportunity to ask myself the question, who am I? Who am I as a teacher mentor? Where's the areas of growth for me? Why am I doing it? How am I doing it? And do I enjoy it? Is it fun? So I was able to work through that kind of reframe. I said, the second one is kind of drilling it down and tightening it. It's who am I as a learning strategies teacher? Who am I as a community supporter? How do I do it? And where do I need to grow? Because right away, you start talking about, I keep giving them keywords, like all the buzzwords, IEP, you know, withdrawal assistance, IPRC, exceptionality. So he's getting all the terms that we constantly flow through that expedite our communications with each other as professionals. What I really appreciate, he's stopping me. He's like, oh, wait. What does that one thing mean? And to pause your thinking, you realize that sometimes in expediency, it makes things less understandable. And it reminds me that there's always going to be someone in the room that isn't as fluid in the short forms as you think they are. So being able to pause and make sure everyone's kind of moving together. I introduced to him that whole concept of who's Kevin. Have I told you about that? The who's Kevin concept I love. Not who's Kevin, where's Kevin?
I was just going to say, yeah, where's Kevin?
Yeah. We know, yeah, who's Kevin, where's Kevin? But the whole where's Kevin concept I introduced him to on Friday as related to, I said, here's your anchoring kind of meme. Where's Kevin? He's like, what do you mean? I mean, like, okay, well, you know the Home Alone movies. Yes. You know how they had great plans. Yes. You know how they ended up basically leaving the kid behind. Yes. I said, okay, flip that into a school context now. And you now have a kid that could disappear. And then, you know, where does this kid pop up? On your attendance list is not attending. Does this kid pop up as in having zeros? Like, you know, what data are you choosing to use to identify this kid? So where's Kevin is kind of like the name of the assignment that I gave him for the weekend. Did I say who's Kevin again? Where's Kevin? Should be where's Kevin?
Maybe who's Kevin is also.
Who is Kevin is absolutely important as well.
I mean, it's important to know where he is for sure, because we're responsible for where he is, but we need to know who he is too.
Yep.
I would like to shift gears. I want to talk about leadership and equity for a moment, if that's okay with you.
Yeah. I also want to drop a couple things about my PQP, if I could.
Yeah, let's start there. When does it start?
Yes.
It has started?
Well, because they have, see, they do this thing, right? They do this thing, and I don't know if they did the same thing to you, but there's pre-course assignments to take care of.
What?
Yeah, dude.
No, I didn't have that.
Yeah, pre-course. So
nightmare. You have to pay extra for those?
No. It all comes, it's all, yeah, the cost is all all in the ticket right from the front end. But the pre-course stuff is I have to do an introduction video. So the pre-course is I have to do an introduction video. No biggie. Simple, super simple. I'll knock that off today.
When do you actually start? Like,
technically, my first class is Tuesday night. So we have our first web conference or whatever Tuesday night.
For like 3 hours?
Yeah, something like that. Hour and a half, I think. Okay. Something. Okay, so the course officially starts in, but you have the pre-course. So the pre-course is read through some stuff. There's a video from OPC, two videos from OPC. I guess there's going to be a video posted of introduction of the teacher that's facilitating the course. Candidates in this course have to post the intro video of themselves. There was also an ask for us to the Twitter task is in there again. The Twitter task is in there again. And bless OPC's heart, but a Twitter task to me is always just a little bit interesting. Now it's not an assignment. What it's doing is asking, I think, I was reading it very early this morning. I don't know if there's an enforcement compliance element to this, as in you have to create a Twitter account. I'm weary. I'm there. I already have one, but you and I both talked. We're no longer the evangelists for Twitter, right? I think we're probably closer to evangelists for connection and communication. Twitter just happens to be one of those tools. So yeah, I had a little bit of an itchy sweater off that one. I'm like, okay, here we go. The enforcement of using Twitter. I shared some resources. So it's like, share your Twitter handle. And share, I need to actually make a note about that because I want to circle back to it. Share your Twitter handle and then also some of the people that are of interesting resources to you. And I was conflicted, right? Because on one hand, it's funny, dude, on one hand, I thought, like, I don't feel like I have to ask someone if I can share their Twitter handle. I would, if they have private accounts, I would probably ask them. I would say, you're right. But the sharing Twitter handles that are publicly available, I think that that's at least a gateway. But I still had a little bit of a reaction where I thought to myself, it kind of falls a little bit close to the people not having to do the work for the work. So I've spent time figuring out the people that I want to follow. I've tried to interact with people that I follow in a way that is enriching to me, and I hope I can contribute to their learning too. So I had a little bit of moment of like a, when I put the resources up on there, and I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to talk to the group just to see where they're, what they're thinking here. If anyone had any hesitancy to just post up resources, you know what I mean? Into a list that doesn't really speak to the awesomeness of all those people. So part of what I'm going to make sure I do, I did it for some of them. I have it in draft mode. I'm going to post up not only the links, but I'm going to put in there who that person is to me and how they've helped me deepen my practice. Because I don't think it's reasonable just to put a list of names and say, hey, here, go for it. So I want to make sure that they know who they're connecting with. So there's that. And that wasn't really asked in the task. It was just a short form task. But I want to make sure that people know those things too. And then I have to write a cover letter. I have to write a cover letter like I'm applying for a VP job that accounts for my experience. So, and that's the pre stuff. There was some administrative stuff that I had to do, like sign up for one of the chapters in the book we're reading to do a book presentation. Sign up. There's some collaborative seminar I have to do. And then there's each module. So, I don't know, 7 through 12. I think 1 through 6 is the PQP1, the way it's organized through OPC. 7 through 12 is PQP2. There was a funny moment in there where one of the individuals, the videos from OPC, were talking about having your practicum in motion and that you're probably right now in the midst of it, gathering your data, writing your summary. I'm like,
nope.
I'll be getting to that in September. Because how I want to live right now is I don't want to live with that much. I can't live with that much stuff to do right now. So, and that's where we're at. It's interesting to me that one of the, the last module that we deal in, module 12, is supporting wellness and well-being. I'm actually surprised that's the last module. I'm actually surprised that that's not a binder for all modules. And it also flies into that conversation that you and I have had about, you know, how important paying attention to wellness is in your pursuit of leadership activities. You know, the benefits of the school can't be at the cost of your wellness.
Some people think it can.
Well, I think it's an overwhelming and intoxicating mentality, right? But that's a power system that I'm growing and getting better tools to become resistant to and to look it in the eye and say, nope. Well, that's also why I haven't done the practicum. And, you know, because it has not, you know, I may have to pay money to get the extension on that. But if I will fight that as well, but if that's the cost to me doing it how I want to do it, well, that was heads up right away. They say, if you don't finish it, you pay money to extend it. Okay. All right. That's not a counter motivator to me. If I can't keep myself well while I'm learning, what's the point for me? Anyways, for me, it is interesting to me that I looked in one of the modules. I was looking for where equity was a part of this. And so far it looks like it's only really highlighted in one activity in one module. And that's in the second module of our course, module 8. Again, we start at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So, and the last thing, I just want to circle back to the Twitter task is them asking me to use the hashtag OPCPQP. And I have nothing fundamentally against the hashtag. I'm skeptical of using the hashtag without, okay, flat out. I hashtag something with OPCPQP. That's me saying that I'm cool with my content being interconnected with OPC, which again, fundamentally, I don't have a problem with. I have no issues with OPC. Thank you for OPC. I'm appreciative of taking the courses. I'm happy that I can pay to take my courses through you. I'm happy for the legal and professional learning support that you offer through my membership. I dig all that flat out, even though I'm sounding, you know, sounding sarcastic. It's absolutely true. I do appreciate all that. Absolutely. And I will be, if and when I become an administrator, I will definitely benefit from all of those resources. I'm weary to brand myself with somebody else's hashtag though. And I won't be tagging OPC PQP into all of my leadership conversations. Cause if there's one thing that I've learned by using social media, as long as I have, like you, is that hashtags and branding, there can be a cost there as well as a benefit. And there are some people that won't interact with posts because they'll look at it and they'll say, oh, this is just a part of a PQP course. There's not going to be any legs here. There's not going to be any further discussion. And I don't think OPC is necessarily thinking that way. I think they are thinking they want to make sure that conversations are findable, that conversations are distributed, connected. They're understanding their own power. They're saying, we're OPC. You use that hashtag and you're now connecting with thousands and thousands of other individuals that are using social media and also branding stuff there. But that also can be a pretty diluted pool as well. I mean, the hashtag itself, like that's a mothership hashtag. So there's going to be so much stuff under OPC PQP that's almost impossible to disaggregate. Like you won't even be able to pull it apart and find anything again. So it's just kind of like piling up the leaves in the corner of the backyard and thinking that the job's done. But to go back in and find your lost glove in the middle of it, like you're not going to be able to do it, especially if the glove's the same color as the leaves. Like you're just, it's lost. So I'm hesitant to use the hashtag if I will work to find the purpose for the hashtag and I will use it with purpose. But I'm not about to, hashtags, I don't know if you've noticed this, there is a prevailing behavior right now of individuals putting LOL on the ends of their statements, even though they aren't really laughing out loud. It's just kind of like, it's a way to kind of close a text message or a smiley face or write, you know, there's these little kind of tropey things that we do in digital communication that are becoming really diffusive. And some hashtags are becoming like that. So to sort of post all of my process learning with OPC PQP, I feel like it's just going to get lost in the pile of leaves. And I do know that there will be some people that will look at my post and not interact with it because they don't want their posts associated with OPC PQP. So that's my Twitter position.
You lit me up with the Twitter position. My biggest pet peeve is that They give you this hashtag and they give you these assignments and then you do them and you try to do them. I don't want to use the word authentic, but like
I'd say that. I think you try. Okay. Yeah, I think you do crave that, right?
Well, I certainly did when I was doing my PQP.
I would say if you're not a familiar user, but so you, if you're someone that had to create an account just to do this task, you're hoping that you're doing everything right because you feel like your assignment is dependent on it. I feel like if you're a longtime user, you might look at that and say, okay, well, this is just one more thing. I can do this, no biggie. I'm going to sit somewhere in outer space on it though and go, but I'm a user, longtime user that tries to have discipline and intention in how I use social media. So I've forced myself to think these, like I said, outer space kind of thoughts on it.
When I was doing the course and we had the Twitter assignments, there were people in my course that were pretty literate with Twitter. And so there was some back and forth, but it was always the same people going back and forth. And then since then, every now and again, I will see one of my colleagues who's taking PQP tweet out about one of their assignments, and I'll respond or I'll look for responses, and it's a ghost town. It's like there's nothing going on. And it, to me, it's just so upsetting that somebody thinks somewhere along the way that they're building capacity in people around using these tools to network and to learn and to share, and they're not. Because, well, there's a couple of reasons. One reason is some people are just not comfortable with it. It's like, okay, well, I have an assignment. It has to be done. I can't not do it. And so I do my assignment and I walk away. And then there's other people who are like, okay, this is cool. I'm going to get into this. And they do what they can to get into it, but they get nothing out of it. So it's like, why am I going to spend my time doing it? Those things are just so frustrating to me. It's just so frustrating. So every time now, I'm happy where you're landing with this, with your thinking around it. The other thing too is you're paying for this experience.
$9.90, baby. $9.90.
Maybe they should be tweeting out about you.
you that would be awesome, eh? They put out on their, that would actually, that's really cool. That is really cool. You imagine OPC, whoever's managing the social media. I would just love to welcome, OPC would love to welcome the candidates currently taking PQP2. Welcome to the course. And then they just, you know, put everyone's name there that they can find. That's really brilliant. That's really brilliant.
So that's what should happen, because you're paying $990 to take this course. You're hoping that there's going to be some instruction and some themes around what's happening today with the virtual learning, with equity, you know, possibly like indigenous component. Like you're looking at.
There is one piece in there of that. But again, I feel like I told you the thing that I'm watching for going into this course is how self-aware is it? How self-aware is it? Is it really, really speaking to, and this is in addition to whatever the practical curriculum is to becoming a vice principal. I believe that there's benchmark things that have to be there. And I get that the self-awareness of the course is going to be brought to the table by the participants. If the participants only talk about the curriculum, like as it is, the things that we, if it doesn't extend into personal connections and other connections and other media connections, then the course kind of suffers a little bit. But I'm also watching for the direction from the mothership. Are they sort of openly speaking to what I've observed, some of the biggest challenges that are kind of that are now fully noticed in education? You like, I'm watching for how do we talk about FNMI connectivity, interactivity, dignity, and honoring? How are we sort of speaking directly to the suffering that COVID has caused? How are we sort of lensing anti-Black racism and the events from the last 12 months? Because this is all of the, this is the framework that anyone that's hoping to become a VP moving forward, this stuff is never going to become invisible again. Like it's going to be a part of the chunkiness and the fabric of becoming a leader. So now we no longer get to say that, you know, these complications are events that either through denial, naivete, blatant ignorance, they're not getting packed up again anytime soon. And I really see that the leadership, the tier of, or let's say the demographic of leadership that may have been holding on to older white patriarchal systems of power and leadership, the people that were sort of like kind of, you know, that had their kind of bony hands on that steering wheel, they're slowly retiring and moving out of these positions. And faces, new philosophies, different orientations, different expressions of culture. You have a lot of different fresh individuals coming into these positions. So why not have, you know, the concept of wellness in the administrative space be a thread that moves through the whole course at the same time that we're talking about equity, at the same time we're talking about dignity and honoring. I'm watching for the self-awareness. And again, I can be one of the people that speaks to this. In the world of deliverables, though, at some point, I'm imagining I might be making a choice to stay with the pack or to be taking extra time to complete tasks. Because if I get hung up on a topic that I feel is critical to my leadership lens moving forward, I won't be able to let it go until I get to a space where I feel like I have the tools or the strategies to return to it if and when I become an administrator. And to be honest, one thing with the PQP, someone said this back in the day that they also found because of what they invested, it was just a really great, it was really great professional development. I would agree with that. So I also have that as well. I'm not about to wait to use the tools that I'm learning in PQP 1 and 2 for when I become an administrator. What, I'm going to bench them between now and then? It may never even happen. So if I have paid $1,800 to extend my learning, you'd be sure I'm going to try using that as a teacher in school too. Like, just that awareness is an amazing toolkit. So you have the TED Ed, you have the TED Talk sound. Should have did that at the beginning.
Sorry, I didn't know where you were going to go.
I never do either. We don't know, right?
We don't know where we're going to go. That's why it won't work here. That's why if we did some editing after the fact, it would work. But I'm surely not putting in the time to do that. So,
dude, we don't have time.
Have you pushed out your process yet? The last episode that we did.
You had to be in the room, right? That's one of those.
You had to be in the room. I want to say that you have me thinking about my principal's papers experience. And I have to say, PQP part one was done through OPC. And I knew a couple of people in the course, and I was young and full of energy. So it was fun that way. But if I were to do it again, I wouldn't have done it that way, because I would have been bored out of my mind. When I did PQP part two, man, I didn't even care about the content, because I knew that the instructor was going to be fire, and I was taking it with a bunch of colleagues that I'm familiar with or have worked with or know somehow in the years that I've spent in this school board. So I signed up for an experience, and the content was just a bonus.
Yeah,
like learning about safe schools and spec ed, I'm like, awesome, but I can't wait to learn with this instructor and with these people. I can't even imagine what it would be like now if I was just taking it on my own virtually. So I give you two thumbs up, but I mean, there are no in-class sessions right now. So if you want to do it, you got to do it this way.
Yeah. And
good for you for having the awareness to look outside the box and keep an eye out for some of these things, because and the cost. Bro, when you actually say the numbers, it hurts. It hurts when you say $1,800. Like, it, talk about privilege, eh?
Yeah.
And hey, the SO courses are crazy expensive too. Like, I don't know. And I'm sure that I won't be able to find it easily, because they're not going to advertise that stuff. But to become a supervisory officer, you have to pay a lot of money to take out those courses.
It does make me wonder. I would like to know what, because we don't often think about that when we design courses, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we definitely don't offload the cost for course. Like, when you design a course or design your curriculum, there's stuff that you might pay for yourself. You don't really think about your hourly in designing the course. It gets embedded into your salary. So it is interesting. Like, I wonder what the costs are, the cost breakdown for a course This is, you know, an OPC instructor, you know, obviously they're going to be salaried. I know they're, I don't know if they're salaried. I can imagine they're salaried, just like I would get paid if I was teaching night school or summer school. I wonder what they're perceived. Like, how do they look at? So I've had a look at the curriculum that's being offered. Much of the, so the environment that we work in is Canvas. I forget what it's called, but it's like
Canva
or something like that. Yeah, I could probably do a better job. I should rep that one well. I don't want to, because I'm not. I want to rep it, not rip it. You ever heard someone say that?
No, I like the first one to say that.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's
that's something that Che Cheney would say.
It is. That's totally that. I would agree. That is, he would rock that definitely. I want to rep it, not rip it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't even know what it's called. Instructure. That's the name of the actual website. I wanted to say Canva, but it can't be that. It's not called Canva.
Well, while you do that, can I tell you how much it would cost to get your supervisory?
Tell me that number.
The total number. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
$7,400.
So that's for all the courses?
Yeah. Each module, there are five modules, and it says here, each module is $1,350. And then there's a $650 fee for the leadership practicum.
Dude, that's something.
It's a lot of money.
It is. It's called Canvas.
Canvas. Okay.
That's the interface. It's called Canvas. And, so it does make me wonder. It makes me wonder about what overhead is for these courses. So obviously the instructor gets paid something. I wonder if there's money that they have set aside for speakers that come and talk to the classes, because we do have some speakers coming. And how they come out with 990 as that number. Now 990 would be the result of whatever infrastructure. And like, I get it. There's going to be they add it up to a certain degree. And then OPC's obviously wanting to take their cut as well. I can't imagine that they don't have a margin in here of some sort. But you're right, 990 is a lot. Like, that is a lot of money for a course. That's, I think, more expensive than an AQ. And I wonder about the cost of AQs as well. And because I wonder about it from the point of view of, like, OPC takes member funds. So they're not for profit. They have a lot of volunteers, but OPC as an entity has to provide services. So, you know, they have to be able to, I don't think they have shareholders, and I imagine a lot of their money does go into infrastructure and supports and all that kind of stuff. Resources for principals. But, you know, when I think about designing a course for myself or for the number of hours that I put in, at some point, I can't say that my salary covers that, because you start doing those numbers and you start to realize you're reducing your salary down to an hourly wage that, you know, it doesn't seem that great anymore. And the courses have to be designed. That's just, you have to have a course, right? And I think about the resources that I use for a course. Sure, I pay for some stuff out of pocket. Many teachers do, but a lot of the things we find are free. So there's no actual cost for drawing in resources. Like, you doing Minecraft in the classroom, does that cost you anything for the kids to do it?
No.
Now, you might say it costs maybe the school board, because the school board had to put together the tech for it. I mean, they might be, because of the ones providing the Chromebooks, like the actual devices for you. Does the school board pay some sort of a membership, do you think, to it? Or is this something you went direct and set up?
No, well, I'm lucky because I know people who do stuff with it, but I also just signed up for a free workshop for my class.
Okay.
So my class is going to get some instruction that way. I've given them instruction along the way, but I'm no expert. The accounts that, you know, they didn't have to pay for their account. They don't have to pay to use the tools. It's going to cost me time, but I will work the curriculum in so that I'm not losing curriculum time. And if anything, I'm buying time because I'm getting my kids engaged and focused.
Yep. So, yeah, I have some questions there. You know, I'm not leading with that when I get into class. It's not the top of my inquiry, but I am curious about that, right? This is a product that we're paying for. And you're right, it is a big chunk of change. It's this one in particular, I'll tell you, like my family helped out with it. So Ma, thanks if you're listening out there. Nice. Yeah.
It worked.
So thanks to my mom for helping me out. She's helped me out before. But that amount, you know, I'm curious as to what goes into the costing of that.
Hopefully you can ask at some point or look into it, but this is what I just imagined the first night. And I actually pictured this face to face. I imagined you walking into the room, to the school where this is happening, and all you hear is this.
No applause, though. No applause. Yeah, there wouldn't be any applause. They'd be like, who's that dude walking in with the sound machine for the TED-Ed talk? That's what they're
doing. And then right when the music ends, you're like, I'm Chris Clough, and I'm here to ask about why.
And I got some questions.
$90 for this course. And everybody's looking at you like, what are you doing? And you're like, well, you're the TED talk music. It's my talk.
Everyone's scratching their name off of their groups.
Yeah.
Where they see, oh, get out of Clough's group. Get out now. Just like we were talking before. The lights go down, like you better get out now because it's going to start. So scratch your name off that. Chris Clough, chapter 3. Yeah, I don't want to be in his book club.
Yeah, no thanks. No, I'm not doing a seminar with him.
That's okay.
I don't miss any of that, eh? I don't miss any of it.
I'm looking forward to it. That took up a lot, dude. You wanted to go in a different direction. I sort of threw down. What do you remember where you wanted to go?
I just wanted to talk about equity and leadership, but
yeah,
I'm feeling like maybe I'll save it for another day.
Okay.
Good luck with your course.
Thanks, man. I'm gonna do my best from a wellness perspective.
You should.
What's that?
It's important. You should.
I am, but within that, where I'm going with it is, you know, the last time I took the PQP, you're like, where did Clough go? Like, he totally disappeared. Being mindful of that I can't disappear so deeply into the course like that last time. So I think the last time, because I took it just under a year ago, right? I took it right at the beginning of summer. I think that I was really craving some deep development. So when I got my hands on that and started to do the PQP, I was kind of craving learning at that level. So I gave into it more than, I gave more of myself to it than I normally would, just because, I think I was, we hadn't done professional development till the end of the school year. I mean, our conversations on Decoded were feeding my professional mind. I was digging that, but I was also craving something in addition to that. So I think that's where my brain went. But I took to heart you also saying that, you know, where the hell did you go? Like, you're sort of like barely around and connected. I think it's important. It's important for that to be in my mind as I go into this next session, because it reminds me that school isn't everything. And, you know, I'm in school all day, and then I do a course about school, and then we talk about school on the weekend. It's important to sort of make sure that the friendships are also still being nurtured. So I appreciate that comment. I'm aiming to do better this time around.
And I meant it nothing more as it was like, just whack, like, you're like, okay, I'm starting this course. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait to da 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 da. And then I'm like, what happened to Clough?
Where's Clough?
Hey, Chris, you good? Yeah, yeah. I'm in the middle of this. I got this assignment. And I was like, whoa. Like, those things sneak up on you. You don't expect them. Or maybe you do. I didn't feel like you were expecting to be hit over the head with how much time it was going to take. But then it did. And I remember laughing. I thought it was hilarious. I'm like, I don't know what happened to Clough. Like, I guess it just between family life.
Yeah.
And doing what you need to do and then doing the course. And it was so intensive because it was in the summer.
Yeah, it was that was the other thing too. It was a 4-weeker. Like it was
God. So your life was like, it was PQP and then family. There's no room for anything else really.
Yeah, that's kind of that's really. And no, then also because it was what?
Those are how those 4-weekers
go. Yeah. And it was also the front end of summer. So then you're sort of doing the other bits of, okay, now I need to do something that is so entirely not school. So it's good for me to have that awareness, and I'm taking that into the next session. So I appreciate that. Thank you. But
things are different now. Like you said, you're going to work every day, and I can imagine it's not going to work well if you say to your partner, you and the kids are on your own tonight. I got PQP. Like, I don't imagine that's going to float over well if you do that too many times.
No.
You wouldn't do that. Like, that's from what I know of you, you'd be like, no, this is taking over my life and that's not going to happen. So I don't know. I just, good for you. Big thumbs up to you. I'm not opposed to taking courses. I've taken a bunch of AQ courses, and if you know, I see something that really interests me, that can benefit me, and I really feel it, I'll go after it for sure. But I know what happens when you get into course mode. I almost quit my last course.
Because I remember.
I got to the point where I was like, I'm done. Like, I got nothing left. And with this pandemic, it's like, oh my God, I can't even imagine what I'd feel like taking an AQ, feeling the way I do. But that's why we have the book club. So our book club starting this week on Thursday. So I hope you can make it. But that's going to be what feeds my soul over the next 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I am down. I'm looking forward to unpacking the book with you folks and, dealing with, there's a whole lot to deal with in that book.
Oh yeah, man. We'll have to talk more about that another time. What did you draw for us today? I feel like Sesame Street. Chris is drawing time.
I didn't have the window up. Let me get my window up so I can see how it looks
to the world.
Well, because then I can see if I'm centering it right.
There's firecrackers, and you've got a bunch of fireworks or firecrackers, and then there's the fire at the bottom. What got you lit up to draw firecrackers today?
I think it was just the idea of, I think I like where my energy is right now in school. Like, I feel kind of lit up. So don't really know. There's something about the anticipation of the next couple months that has some kind of like indescribable excitement. Like, I'm looking forward to working with this TC. I'm looking forward to taking the PQP course. I'm liking where the direction of my teaching's going right now. So yeah, I feel like I feel excited, celebratory. It's good stuff.
Nice. Well, thanks for your time on this season 4, episode 24, which is also episode 158. We made it to episode 158.
That's a whole lot of reflective practice, dude.
Right on. Well, have a great day, and I look forward to hearing more about what's going on with you as time goes on.
For sure, man. Take care. See ya.